Our final panelist is Michael Cabanatuan, who's president of the Northern California Media Workers Guild, a labor union that represents 2,100 workers, most of whom are newspaper employees and many of them journalists in the Bay Area and the San Joaquin Valley. Mr. Cabanatuan is a staff writer for a San Francisco newspaper and has also worked as a reporter for papers in Modesto, Richmond, and Paradise, which is in California.
Thank you very much for the opportunity to speak here today and to add the voice of labor, particularly media labor, to this discussion. I am president of the Northern California Media Workers Guild, which is part of the Newspaper Guild, Communication Workers of America. As was said, we represent about 2,100 workers in the Bay Area and the San Joaquin Valley. Many of them are journalists, and many of those members expect us to protect the profession as well as their rights of workers, and that's why I'm here today. I have about 19 years of journalism experience, all in California. That includes small community newspapers, Paradise, which is about 70 or 80 miles north of here, mid-sized regional newspapers, and currently a major metropolitan daily, the San Francisco Chronicle, where I'm a reporter and an occasional editor. This would be a good time for me to point out that the views I express are mine and those of my union, not of the newspaper, which may have some other interests. As a journalist and a union official, I find the prospect of further media consolidation as a result of ownership deregulation frightening. I say further consolidation because the increase in chain ownership of newspapers, the near disappearance of independent, family, and locally owned newspapers, and the practice of clustering by newspaper chains have already brought a noticeable decrease in the diversity, variety, and volume of news coverage. More consolidation will only make things worse. Already the consolidation of newspaper ownership has diminished the type of news coverage. Most newspapers, almost all but the major metropolitan newspapers, no longer do any investigative reporting of any substance. And very few newspapers still assign a reporter to cover what I consider a very important beat, labor. It wasn't that way 20 years ago. Attention to government affairs has also slipped at many newspapers and certainly at broadcast outlets, which have trimmed political reporting staffs, particularly state capital bureaus. California is an excellent example. While many California newspapers, including mine, maintain healthy bureaus in Sacramento, some do not. But that's still good news compared to the broadcast industry. It's my understanding that currently no California television stations have state capital news bureaus, and very few, if any, radio stations staff the state capital on a regular basis. That doesn't bode very well for the fate of newspaper bureaus if they become owned and controlled by the people who now call the shots at broadcast outlets. I'm no believer in grand conspiracy theories. I think they require careful planning and forethought and brilliant execution, all things that are usually absent in most political and commercial organizations. It's just that bigger companies, both privately and publicly owned, seem to look even harder at the bottom line as they grow and don't consider much at all their responsibility to inform the citizenry. As a result, we end up with too much lowest common denominator news, stories that entertain but don't do much to inform or add to the public debate. At the same time, a lot of the important but not necessarily captivating news, often about government, goes unreported. A Pew Research Center poll found that more than three-fourths of all journalists believe that news stories they perceive as important but dull are sometimes ignored, while a third of reporters believe that stories that might hurt the financial interests of their news organization oftentimes go unreported. Putting the power to control the headlines of newspapers, television, radio, and internet stations, or internet news sites, in the hands of just a few corporations doesn't make sense. To put a twist on an overused business cliche, it's a lose-lose-lose situation. The public will lose even more of its ability to choose from the so-called marketplace of ideas as that marketplace turns from a supermarket to a 7-Eleven. Fewer stories on fewer topics from fewer reporters will be available. Number two, journalists will lose jobs, and certainly as a union president, that's something I'm concerned about. If a newspaper, radio station, television station, and internet news site in a major city, let's say San Francisco, were all owned by the same corporation, do you think that they will keep sending a print reporter, a radio reporter, a television reporter, a photographer, a camera operator, and maybe a sound technician out to cover an important story? Sooner or later, and I suspect the answer is sooner, they'll decide that one or two people can do the jobs of five. And when that happens, not only will jobs be lost, but quality will drop as reporters and journalists struggle to get all the work done. What will also happen is that the variety of perspectives will be diminished. As Brenda mentioned, I should point out here that there are also other jobs that will undoubtedly be lost too, particularly in the areas of advertising sales and marketing and promotions. You will not need separate staffs to do those. Communities will also lose. Local news coverage will probably shrink to satisfy a bigger regional market instead of having a local broad-based focus. Also, newspapers have always been active participants in communities, sponsoring events, donating money and advertising, sometimes both, to worthy organizations and nonprofits. So have broadcast stations. With common ownership, I suspect, fewer organizations will benefit. In closing, I would like to point out that our nation's diversity is a large part of what makes us strong. To allow the diversity of news coverage to be diminished and to be replaced with shallow, homogeneous information packed for a multimedia, mega mass audience is a mistake. Thank you very much.
And that was Michael Kuban-Watanon, and he's president of the Northern California Media Workers Guild.
I think also just Commissioner Adelstein would like one or 2 minutes just to address the panelists, and then we'll go into the public comment period.
Fine, thank you.
Just wanted to make a quick observation so we make sure we have enough time to hear from the people we came here to hear from. I wanted to note that representatives of large media companies were invited to attend but declined today. You might have heard that it was fairly unanimous view among the panelists here about major concerns about media consolidation, but every day we get very well-paid lawyers coming through my office and explaining why more concentration is a good idea. And at some point we could maybe engage in a little dialogue about their arguments. I'd like to sort of get people's response. If we have a minute here, maybe we could get a quick response just so we can get their perspective on the record, since they paid so much good money to make sure that I heard it. And apparently couldn't afford to send somebody here today to respond to the public at large. They say that consolidation allows them to actually improve the news, that if you allow newspapers, for example, to buy television stations, it allows the wonderful news-gathering capabilities of the newspaper to be applied to a television station that would give additional heft to the news-gathering. And if you can combine them and they can make more money, they can afford to pay for even more news coverage. They also say that national companies realize that local coverage pays, that it's a worthwhile thing to make sure that you have a good local news team, because that allows them to continue to make money. And they say that if you allow networks to own more of their local affiliates, right now they're limited to 35% of local affiliates in the country, that will allow the networks to make enough money to be able to continue to provide free over-the-air television and not put all of their programming on pay TV like cable and satellite. I don't know if any of you would want to respond quickly to some of the arguments that are made by the other side, just briefly.
Well, I think the first response is we certainly haven't seen that the consolidation that's already gone on in terms of newspaper chains, we haven't seen that result in improved news coverage and more news coverage or more news holes. So I don't see why suddenly there'd be this dramatic change of orientation. More money in the media business does not seem to equal better coverage.
The question of the sort of synergy that's gained by having newspapers and television stations combine and having reporters cover from two modalities, it seems to me it begs the issue of why television stations, particularly in markets like this, which are very profitable, don't hire more staff if they want greater reportorial depth and breadth. So the idea that people who currently will not spend the money it takes, even though they have it, to do that kind of work will, if they're connected with the resources of a newspaper, strikes me as disingenuous.
I think it's also important to recognize that the media are different. They operate differently. They have different strengths. Obviously, in television, the pictures are important. In radio, the sound is important. The quickness is important. In newspapers, it's the depth and the perspective that's important. And I don't know that one reporter could do all three of those very well, and I don't know that a single editor could manage and control that very well either.
Thank you.
Amy? I'll take the chair's prerogative and just add a couple of comments myself. I think that Ben Bagdikian's remarks pointed out the fallacy of what some on the commission call intermodal competition. There may be more technologies available to develop or to distribute content, but there certainly aren't more owners or necessarily more viewpoints or local content. And I think the other panelists have explained why local content is getting overlooked, and consolidation won't help that. The other is I think that in addition to the act itself and the relaxation of requirements in media ownership, what we've seen at the commission is not upholding what the original bargain was in terms of regulation in the public interest, and so there's a lot of concern that there's now less oversight, there's more consolidation, and in fact less oversight or less requirement for those owners of access to the public airwaves to, in fact, be accountable to the public. And that's another issue of concern to many people, I think. Thanks. All right.
Good morning. My name is Pat Lynch Barrett. I'm the media co-chair for the Women's Leadership Alliance, representing 20 strong women's organizations in the Bay Area. I'm the media chair for the California Women's Agenda, representing 500 women's organizations in the state of California. And together, that represents some 2.5 million women in the state of California. I also am the founder of Women's Radio and Women's Calendar. The calendar speaks to some 400,000 women leaders across the country every week and over 7,000 women's organizations. I think that it's important to point out that in the whole history of broadcasting, minorities, of which women were not even included until about a year and a half ago, thanks to Gloria Tristani, minorities have never owned more than 3% of radio and television in this country. After the 96 Telecommunications Act, that has been reduced to something like 1.8%. It has certainly not been shown that the consolidation that has happened so far between radio and television in particular has resulted in any greater degree of coverage of any news more in-depth, in fact less, they, because it is currently, most people know, called Wall Street Radio and Wall Street Television, has resulted in less staff to do in-depth research and less coverage, certainly, as has been pointed out, of youth, minorities, women, women's issues, et cetera, et cetera. So I think that you're right that the public in general is not aware of the fact that we actually own the airwaves in America. And it's time for us to take every action, including standing up here today, to say that we understand that we actually own these airwaves, and we call on the SEC to be our guardian and not the guardian of big business.
Good afternoon. My name, or good morning. My name is Deborah Glenn Rod. Excuse me, Deborah Glenn Rogers. I'm speaking on behalf of the National Organization for Women. I'm the president of the San Francisco chapter of NOW. This is an issue that we have long been concerned about. We talk about media democracy because we realize that a democratic society cannot continue without a free media. There's an old adage that says that those who control the means of communication control a society. We used to recognize that fact a lot more openly. We used to be a lot more aware of the fact that the airwaves that make broadcast and media communication possible belong to the citizens of this nation. And the FCC was created to serve the citizens of this nation so that we could enhance public discourse, so that voices of minority groups and voices that are unpopular to those with vested interests could be heard, and so that an honest public discourse can take place. We're not seeing that happen. Since 1996, we have seen less and less of that sort of honest communication. And that has been because of regulatory changes as well as legislative changes. The proposed changes would even further weaken the rights of citizens in a democracy. We cannot communicate meaningfully as long as those who effectively control through ownership the means of communication are serving only their own corporate vested interests that are not the same as those of the citizens of this democracy. Thank you.
My name is Steve Zeltzer, and I'm the founder of the Labor Video Project and LaborNet and LaborTech, and also on the board of directors of the Union Producers and Programmers Network. We have a very outrageous situation in this country for labor. There is not one national labor or TV or radio show in this country. So the working people of this country don't have democratic rights in this country to speak out. Why is that? The media monopolization is a threat to democracy. Comcast, which controls 90% of the cable market in the Bay Area, has prevented anti-war ads coming onto their system around the country. They've been spying on web page users for consumer interests commercially without letting people know. They've been involved in union busing in Chicago. These media monopolies like Comcast do not represent working people, are scamming the public in this country. This deregulation, which I thank the member of the board for bringing forward these hearings at least, has been supported by Democrats and Republicans. We have corruption of the Congress, where the decisions as to our public speech and our freedom of speech are decided by the media robber barons. And in the Bay Area, Nancy Pelosi, Barbara Boxer, and Feinstein have all supported deregulation. So the people in this country and in the Bay Area have to challenge these politicians. Who do you represent, the people who want democracy in the media, or you want to represent the corporate media robber barons? We call for the revocation of licenses of those media companies who systematically violate labor rights. If they violate labor laws, they do not have a right to have a license to broadcast. We call for municipalization of cable systems and the internet. In Ashland, they pay $14 a month, yet in the Bay Area and in San Francisco, we're paying $35, $40. That prevents working people from actually having access to the media. Thank you.
Good afternoon. My name is Sarah Jones. I'm a performer, and I thank you. Really happy to be here. I'm here from New York City. I'm performing in this area. I can tell you that without KPFA, without Pacifica Network in New York City, there would be very few outlets for independent artists like myself, but I am also want to speak as an audience member to the detriment that consolidation of media represents for all of us. I can't tell you how frustrating it is to travel this country and hear the same things on the radio, to know that there are only certain artists' voices that are going to be heard, because if Clear Channel disagrees with you, you can say goodbye to your right to freedom of expression as an artist. I don't think I can do as much justice to this issue as the rest of the people behind me. I'd like to give them my time, but I want to beg you to consider our children, our grandchildren's futures in a democracy, a real democracy that we hope to begin to build here. We really need all of the diversity in our markets that we can have, and not just Fox News or some other such mouthpiece.
Good morning. I'm Henry Kroll. For 30 years, I've been working in advocacy for expanding public broadcasting. For 10 years of those, I've been a elected member of the KQED board for TV and radio. I'm speaking today on behalf of the Media Democracy Legal Project, and I have a submittal to pass out. Thomas Jefferson, the drafter of our Declaration of Independence, says an enlightened citizenry is indispensable for the proper functioning of a republic. In the landmark free speech case Red Lion versus FCC, the Supreme Court concluded the purpose of the First Amendment is to preserve an uninhibited marketplace of ideas in which truth will ultimately prevail. It is the right of the public to receive access to social, political, aesthetic, moral, and other ideas and experiences, which is crucial here. That right may not constitutionally be abridged either by Congress or by the FCC, quoting the Supreme Court in Red Lion. 96, the presidential candidate Bob Dole called the Telecom Act the biggest giveaway in U.S. history because $70 billion of the public's electronic spectrum was handed over to the existing media giants so they could develop digital TV. This was given to the existing broadcasting companies without even the FCC establishing any public interest obligations for the new digital spectrum. We joined citizens across the country coming today to ask for something back for that giveaway.
Time, please.
Okay. But I conclude by calling your attention to our legal case that's being formulated to challenge the constitutionality of the Telecom Act and to seek its repeal in Congress and to forestall any further delusions of the existing media restrictions that control our public airwaves. Thank you.
Hi, my name is Marcelo Balve. I'm a staff editor with the Pacific News Service in San Francisco and with NCM, which is a project of the Pacific News Service and represents over 400 ethnic and immigrant news organizations in California and across the country. I don't know how many people know that one out of every four Californians today is foreign-born, and that in the 1990s, while media consolidation was going on after 1996 and the act that a lot of people have spoken about, there was an unprecedented wave of immigration that transformed our communities. And in addition to the Black American and Native American media that served ethnic audiences, there was a proliferation of ethnic media that occurred in California and across the country. And I wanted to highlight that if for mainstream America, media consolidation means, you know, the undermining of democracy and the undermining of local communities, for ethnic America, it really means the severing of a bridge that has helped to integrate them economically, culturally, and politically into U.S. society and increase their fruitful participation in our country. And I wanted to give some concrete examples. As I've been writing about things like this, for example, in the Mission District, without naming names because I don't think it's important, there was one local station which for years provided up to 3 hours of local news every day. Within the last 5 years, that station has become part of a national network. Now it has three 2-minute segments of news per hour at most, a 2-hour public affairs show that occurred every day by a well-known local Latino journalist was terminated and was replaced by a variety show centered around infomercials. And local Hispanic radio stations have relegated public affairs shows to 7 a.m. slots on weekends. So, thank you.
I'm pleased. Thank you very much.
Hi, my name is Elena Campos, and there are just a couple things I want to say. I'm not really representing anybody but myself and my anger. I just want to reiterate this is a very angry time for a lot of us. The thing that I want to stress is that there's such a just an elimination of a diversity of viewpoints, and it's not just that we have retired military generals on stage, but we never hear from youth activists, as one of the panelists said today. We never hear from academics, and we certainly don't hear from grassroots organizers or people like me in the community. Nobody ever calls me and asks my opinion, except for if I want to change my phone service. In terms of, I also want to say, too, that the way the system is set up now, for those of us who do make artwork, make independent films, the way the system's set up, we don't share them with anybody except for often ourselves, people that are in similar organizations or share similar viewpoints. I love Pacifica. I'm so happy to live here, but often it's so off. It feels like I'm speaking to everybody else who shares my viewpoint. I'm not necessarily reaching other people. I work with a lot of independent women of color filmmakers with brilliant, beautiful visions, but because we make short films, we don't get distribution in theaters. Because we make short films, we don't get access to TV. So the way the system's set up, we can't even share our ideas. And then the last thing I want to say is just to reiterate that the people that are benefiting from this aren't just the corporations, but our selected officials. And I just want to put that forth. Those who contribute to the campaigns, the corporations that are pushing this agenda, they only benefit people like Bush, as well as all the Democrats in office. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Bill Riley. I've been keenly interested in this issue for a very long time. Mr. Adelstein, I learned of this hearing for the first time from your Chronicle article yesterday. I could not have recalled your name previously. Now it should go down in history. Let me suggest to the audience that you may be attending the most important meeting that has ever been held in this hall. I heartily support your endeavors and those of your sponsors today, Mr. Adelstein. I believe in both free enterprise and democratic government. However, now they seem to be contradictions in terms.
Please,
with free enterprise, excesses of big business killing democracy. 5 seconds more. I believe government has a legitimate role in curbing the excesses of big business. I believe the media has an obligation to keep an eye on both and not be under the thumb of big business. All of this has gone awry in recent years.
Thank you, but we have many more people to hear from. Thank you very much.
Thank you. My name is Jonathan Jay, and I'm from Seattle, and one of the co-founders of IndieMedia.org and MicroRadio.net. I'd like to, before I say anything at all, I'd like to really thank KPU and KPFA for broadcasting these proceedings, because when the FCC, when Mr. Adelstein and Mr. Copps were in Seattle back in March, there was not one single licensed broadcaster that felt that this was worth putting on the air, which doesn't mean it didn't get broadcast. We're talking about deregulation. That's the question of the day. And but we're only talking about deregulation for a very few number of people, only a small handful. They represent billions and billions of dollars, but you're only talking about several hundred people at most. and expanding their ability to speak. When there is more consolidation of the means of communication, fewer voices are heard. And when fewer voices are heard, the possibility that we will one day be able to live in a democracy is farther and farther away. You talked about three components that you're going to be using, competition, localism, and diversity. With competition, the more, the merrier. I think we all understand that, but that doesn't mean it's just for the ultra-wealthy few. It's for everyone, every one of us. And what you need to focus on when you're thinking about deregulation at the top end is deregulation at the grassroots as well, as a counterbalance to the very, very top-heavy media structures that exist in this country.
No, excuse me. We have many people to hear from here. You can talk to many of you after.
I would just like to conclude and say that if the FCC wants to fulfill its mandate and to act in the public interest, that they will stop interfering with the public's access to the public's airwaves, and they will allow the myriad micro voices a chance to use the mass media. If they want to deregulate micro FM of less than 10 watts on open, unused, second adjacent frequencies that LPFM licenses do not address.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Hi, my name's Wendy Freifeld. I'm the district director for Congresswoman Lynn Woolsey, whose district is, thank you, just north of the Golden Gate Bridge. It's an honor to be here representing a member of Congress to talk about this important topic. So I do have a statement from Congresswoman Woolsey I'd like to read. I hope it's less than 2 minutes. Thank you for the invitation to join you today to discuss media ownership rules with FCC Commissioner Adelstein. I sincerely regret that my schedule doesn't permit me to attend, but I commend the sponsors of this event for bringing awareness to this important issue. Like you, the residents of Marin and Sonoma counties and I recognize the value of competition in the media community and its importance to consumers. We all realize that democracy is built upon independence, accuracy, and diversity in our national and local media. Yet the FCC's review of media ownership has the potential to undo decades-long rules that have worked to ensure these qualities, and new FCC regulations could severely limit individuals' access to multiple sources of information. In the Bay Area, we know the value of having access to different perspectives, and we know that the free flow of information is a key element of our democracy, and this will be undermined if media ownership is consolidated in the hands of a few. While Chairman Powell just announced that...
Please wind up, Cookie.
I'll skip to the end. That's why I've joined with my House colleagues in letters to Chairman Powell urging that the FCC reconsider its proposed rules to lift current ownership limits. You can count on me to speak out for the values that we hold dear as this battle comes to the halls of Congress. Thank you.
Hi, I'm John Mark Shandonia from San Francisco. I just wanted to point out that I think that the consolidation of the media has gone too far already, and the current media owners are excluding alternative viewpoints from the airwaves. As an example, take the recent or ongoing war in Iraq. Very few anti-war voices were heard. In fact, Amy Goodman made the insightful point that if we had a state-owned media, how would it be any different from CNN or Fox News? And I think I think for one thing, the graphics probably wouldn't be as good. But anyway, I just wanted to say that we not only need to work on stopping this further consolidation from happening, but also working to overturn the 96 Telecommunications Act, which was voted for by over 90% of Congress and the Senate, including both of our California senators. And so we should really remember that when they come up for re-election. Thanks.
Good afternoon. My name's Peter Coyote. I'm an actor and writer, and I'm here representing WorldLink Television, one of the last remaining national channels not under corporate domination. I'd like to thank Mr. Edelstein for performing this civic duty and giving us all this opportunity. It seems to me that the meta issue here is actually corporate domination of the civic sector. You actually need rich, wealthy, powerful corporations to have a wealthy country. You don't need them dominating the civic sector. And what's happening in broadcasting is an example of that. The extension of that is equally frightening. Most people in this room probably do not know that all voting machines are owned by private corporations and that the software is proprietary. And there's currently a case in Georgia where admitted voter fraud did not overturn an election, elected a candidate, and no one knows how it was done. Senator Chuck Hagel in Nebraska is the first Republican to win his seat, owns the voting machine company, overturned all straw polls. That's an extension of where we will go. It seems to me that the Telecommunications Act, the current FCC domination by media, and the corporate domination of media is basically being done for convenience and profit, and it works against the interests of the citizens. It works against democratic procedures and principles. I thank you for supporting this struggle. I thank you for taking these remarks on the record, and I'd like to point out that the FCC is not the end, but the beginning. Keep an eye on the voting machines and the process of voting. Thank you.
I'm Todd Davies. I teach at Stanford University in the Symbolic Systems Program, and I'm also a volunteer for LaborNet, your alma mater, Jonathan. I wanted to tell you, Jonathan, why you were speaking yesterday on Laura Flanders' program on KLW. I switched over to the AM dial, 810 KGO, to listen to what was being talked about there on talk radio. And Ron Owens, just to let you know, the discussion that you were missing was discussing with his listeners who was going to win on American Idol. Now, I believe that's an ABC program, which happens to own KGO. And this is an example of how media consolidation gets in the way of news and civic discourse because it creates interests that override that. At every level. And just a couple of examples. Many of you know another ABC Disney example. Brian Ross, probably the most respected television reporter at the national level, a few years ago prepared a story for ABC on the fact that that at Disneyland there were people who had been committed or had convicted of crimes against children. Those people were being employed at Disneyland, and it was a scandal. ABC killed the story because it was owned by Disney, and it didn't want to piss off the management of ABC, which was Disney. In the late 70s, Time magazine followed earlier precedent in selecting its Man of the Year. In 1979, it picked the Ayatollah Khomeini, who was argued to be the person in the world who most affected world events that year. They got protests over this. Some people canceled their subscriptions. People wrote in. The point is, they picked Giuliani in 2001. They couldn't pick Osama bin Laden because there were too many interests owned by AOL Time Warner that simply couldn't permit the honest selection to be made. That's what happens with media consolidation.
Hello. I guess I'm one of the 25% born outside the country, living in this country right now. My name is Tony Phillips. I don't represent anybody. I'm a member of FAIR. I think I just have one salient point to add, and that's that this country is just and is still fighting a war, and many of my citizen friends who are members, who are citizens of this country, have had to look outside the country to media outlets based in other countries to get alternate views. This country has these alternate views, but they're not available on mass distribution. And I think that this is going in the wrong direction to help with that situation. Thank you.
Good morning. My name is Jeff Perlstein. I'm the executive director of a nonprofit called Media Alliance. Thank you very much. And it's quite an honor to be here with all of you here assembled today, and also the many, many people listening on the air on KPFA and KPOO all throughout Northern California. So thanks to those stations for broadcasting this hearing. And as the organization that actually initiated getting this hearing to take place and one of the co-sponsors of the hearing itself, I also want to thank Commissioner Adelstein for making the trip. This is such a vital public policy issue, and really it's about the heart of our democracy, so thank you very much for making the time. And folks here in the Bay Area are actually probably very familiar with Media Alliance's perspective and work around this issue. And so many eloquent folks have already spoken today that I actually am going to not speak too much around that. We have some materials out front where you can read further about the work that we've been doing and some of the resolutions that we've put out that many of your organizations have signed on to, calling for greater media diversity and press freedom. What I wanted to talk a little bit in my brief time is about the public process here and point out that actually these hearings on this vital public policy issue are a result of mobilization by the public. The chairman did not intend to have any public hearings on this issue. It was a result of a broad coalition of people all around the country, which we were involved with from the beginning, to really put a significant amount of pressure on him to agree to one official hearing in Richmond, Virginia. As a result of that hearing, so many people found out about it, there's just been this groundswell of support, and local groups all around the country have called for the commissioners to come, and we want to thank Copps and Adelstein for coming to those hearings. But it's really been up to these local groups to take on the responsibility and a lot of the work and even the costs for making these happening. So we do look for your continued support. And that's what I want to move to next, is what are the opportunities for us beyond today? It's very important that we're all here today to raise our voices, but we all know that this is a struggle that goes well beyond this afternoon. And I'm actually going to take the liberty to take a bit more time. There are some steps on our website where we have the resource page for what the public can do around this very vital policy issue. That's media-alliance.org, www up front. And I'm going to quickly list some of those steps for the people here and on the air. Of course, we've gathered today, and that's one of the important ones, to meet with the commissioner and get the word out over the airwaves. Another one is that we are putting forward a resolution that we're asking lots of organizations to sign on to, and many already have, whether they're media workers unions, whether they're community-based organizations, media producers organizations, community radio stations, etc. This is an unprecedented outpouring of support and concern around this issue, and we're still looking for signers to that resolution through May 15th, which we will present to the FCC. So we ask you to sign on. That's at our website as well. You can also call our office if you don't have web access. We also have postcards out front that we'll be delivering by hand to Senator Boxer and also to Senator McCain. The reason we've chosen those two is that the Commerce Committee in the Senate has oversight of the FCC. It is up to our elected officials to demonstrate and exercise that oversight. Chairman McCain is the chair of the Senate Commerce Committee, and Senator Boxer is one of our, of course, California senators who is on that committee. So we urge you to make those notes outside as well. Also, for folks who won't be able to make public comment in the chamber, we've set up a video camera outside where you can make videotaped comments that we will submit as well. We will transcribe them and submit them. But I also really wanted to back up for a second, too, and say that this is also about well beyond today and this specific rulemaking. This rulemaking, it looks like Chairman Powell is very focused on having it wrapped up on June 2nd or June 3rd, even though people all across the country have expressed the opinion that he should delay and get more public input, even though the majority of senators, a bipartisan majority on the Commerce Committee, issued a letter saying that he needs more public comment and needs to push back that deadline. So what we need to do is be thinking beyond this rulemaking as well. And that's part of what we're doing today, and what I encourage you to do is continue building grassroots strength and power for change, for social reform in this realm and others, because communications is so linked to all the other issues that we care about, whether that's confronting racism, whether that's confronting environmental justice and taking on environmental justice, living wage, etc. We can't move those forward without addressing the central role of communications, and it takes all of us getting engaged and really moving that forward. So we look forward at Media Alliance to working with you, and we really look forward to building this. I believe we're going to go to lunch shortly, and I just lastly wanted to mention that we are going to have a rally out front that is to get some more voices into the mix and also to support Commissioner Adelstein and COPS in really making sure that we don't have any further consolidation of the publicly owned airwaves. Thank you for indulging me, and thanks for coming out for this.
Good afternoon, all. I'm Alexis Gonzalez, speaking on behalf of the San Francisco Labor Council, AFL-CIO, representing 80,000 members here in the Greater Bay Area community. We consider ourselves a community, although I understand that perhaps today we're a media market. San Francisco Labor Council, the local entity of the AFL-CIO, is proudly, more often than not, the vanguard, very often militant voice of the larger House of Labor. However, I'm pleased to report to you this afternoon that the International Federation, the AFL-CIO, has taken a strong and unambiguous position on the denouncement of increased consolidation of the nation's media, our members' workplaces, and source of information for our working families. The AFL-CIO Department for Professional Employees, which represents organized labor's workers in newspapers, television, radio, and entertainment, and their affiliated communications unions, have warned us that even a relaxation of existing rules, much more so the outright elimination, will exacerbate the trend of large corporate control as conglomerates gobble up smaller independent companies and outlets. Our contract negotiations are, as I know you are aware, then conducted by corporate rather than local representatives, with corporate demands rather than local issues taking precedence. At the same time, consolidation has led to an assault on the jobs in news and entertainment. In the last 3 years, a bit less than 3 years, about 70,000 media workers have been laid off, and radio employment has dropped by 7,000 in 2 years after 20 years of continued growth. Thank you, Commissioner, for coming to San Francisco. Welcome. And I appreciate being in the company of the strong voices that you've heard this afternoon. Thanks.
Thank you for giving me this opportunity to make a public comment. My name is Matthew Lasar. I teach United States history at UC Santa Cruz, and I'm the author of a book titled Pacifica Radio, The Rise of an Alternative Network, a study of early listener-supported radio. The early history of commercial radio is replete with the stories of people from relatively humble middle-class entrepreneurial origins starting radio stations. These include restaurant owners, hoteliers, accountants, small manufacturers who wanted to get into the media, expand their local influence, and in some instances, just have some fun. I scanned the web looking at radio license prices today, and I don't see that as much of an option for people without backing from the corporate sector. Even the smallest rural station licenses in many areas go for hyperinflated prices. For example, BuySellRadio.com, in case you're interested, is listing what they call a quote-unquote mom-and-pop station in Pinedale, Wyoming, 80 miles from Jackson Hole. The seller actually boasts the town is, quote, far away from any population center, end of quote. How much does the seller want for this station, whose transmitter power he does not disclose? $50,000 short of $1 million. Then the seller offers this telling and, to my mind, heartbreaking caveat, and I quote, "Time and again, I receive requests for more information from people who could not possibly buy a radio station. After spending hours or days getting information together, I will hear, 'Will you take 10,000 down and carry the rest?' The answer is no, so I must ask anyone replying to this ad to explain and disclose their financial situation to me in their initial response, since I simply don't have the time to communicate with the hundreds of people expressing interest in this station who simply don't have the money to buy it. Sure, I might carry half of it, but I need a substantial down payment if I'm going to play banker." I think that this seller's complaint says worlds about the real chances of our nation's moms and pops have of getting into broadcasting. Don't we have an obligation to make electronic media ownership accessible to more than just those who can put $500,000 down on a frequency which the seller boasts is in the middle of nowhere? Do you think that Chairman Powell's media ownership proposals will make the situation better? Worse? Far worse? Ask me something hard. Thank you.
My name is Ian Boll. I teach the history of science and techniques and community studies at the University of California. I'm available virtually at iboll@socrates, you asked for that, .berkeley.edu. That's I-B-O-A-L, B for botulism. I was in such a room before, 7 or 8 years ago in Washington, when we tried to stop this juggernaut, the 1996 Telecommunications Act. What a travesty that was. It's the same beast that confronts us today. It's tempting to say that these proceedings are the second time around a farce. Certainly the public comment period is more or less ridiculous and itself a symptom of the crisis. The diverse polyphony of our voices reduced to 120 seconds, immensely generous, of course, by the measure of corporate media. Reduced to postcards and what the moderator unironically called 2 cents, quite so. It mimics, it mirrors, in other words, the mediascape of private television and radio. For this reason, I do not address the FCC or other specialists in capitalist regulation, our present commissioner excepted. The FCC are a cause of this disaster, are not a cause of this disaster, it is in itself another symptom. I speak just to those of you in the room and those listening on KPFA and KPOO who intend harm to this system of state-sponsored private tyranny that calls itself free enterprise or the market and even dares call itself democracy. The flourishing of life within this city, this country, and I dare say this planet, now depends on the reappropriation of the commons. And that includes... Thank you. And that includes, because the means of communication and an endless conversation is the condition of possibility of all else, the seizing back of the electromagnetic spectrum. Pake Ben Bagdikian, would you allow me just to finish? Pake Ben Bagdikian, an oligopoly of 20 or 4 or 2 barely makes a difference. Would it make it much worse? I don't know. The whole thing stinks. It is rotten. It is like trying to regulate the slave quarters. Let us take it out for burial. I just want to say this to the commissioner. Please take this news back to the FCC. There are millions of us around the world now who understand the lie of the market. It would better be called the anti-market. One name for our struggle is the anti-globalization movement. Another is the anti-war movement. In our sights are not only the regulations of the FCC, but the whole system. In the words of a poet at an earlier moment of reaction, at the high tide of parliamentary privatization in England in the wake of another devastating war and after a police riot on a defenseless citizenry, Shelley said, "We are many, they are few." Thank you.
Thank you, Commissioner and Media Alliance, for allowing us to have this public meeting. I'm only sorry the other commissioners couldn't be here. My name is Brad Johnson. I'm a radio engineer from Modesto, California. I'm here today to share with you my experiences with media consolidation. Prior to 96, there were at least a dozen fully staffed radio stations with independent owners in the Modesto market. This allowed for several full-time air personalities, a chief engineer, and many support office staff, each making a living at each and every one of the radio stations. Since Telecom 96, there are only two main corporations who control those dozen radio stations, and the staff of one station, pre-Telecom 96, must now run 5, 6, or 8 stations. Once the larger corporations were allowed to increase the number of radio stations they could legally own and operate from one location, they began consolidating office space and staff. This meant elimination of many full-time jobs, and those who were left on staff were made to work harder and longer without compensation for the increase in responsibilities. People would put in overtime hours to cover the cutbacks in staff, yet they would not be fairly paid for it. You see, after your station was bought by Citadel or Clear Channel, you were likely to be laid off, and because of consolidation, there was less and less options for jobs within the radio industry. Since Clear Channel and other large broadcasters began buying up what were once local and independent radio stations all over the country, it's now hard to find a job in radio without having to work for Cheap Channel. That is, if they had any new job openings. Typically, those new stations that are freshly corporatized employ a salary and a hiring freeze. I've been working for more than a decade as a radio engineer for a large Modesto station, and also at the same time as an engineer for another group of stations. Then those two companies were both bought by what is now known as Clear Channel. No longer was I working for two companies that competed for my technical services. I found myself working for more hours for less pay. I kept very busy working a few years after the Telecom 96 Act, breaking down longtime local stations and moving them into the corporate building. Maybe everyone else was busy too. Too busy to ask why we built 5 stations in one building without a newsroom. Soon after the construction of the radio station cluster was completed, I was told my job was to be cut to part-time, or Clear Channel would give me a full week of severance pay if I wanted to quit. Then I was illegally terminated over a private email I had written from my home computer regarding illegal activities at Clear Channel, stuff they perpetrate on their own employees, such as a policy against paying overtime as required by state law, equal opportunity employment issues, employing underage children for dangerous antenna tower work, numerous technical as well as OSHA safety violations, and reoccurring sexual harassment in the workplace. In closing, squelching diversification and promoting cookie-cutter radio is not in the public interest. Breaking labor laws and not paying overtime to employees is a criminal behavior. It should also be noted that 3 people, including 2 children, were killed in Northern Carolina while working on a 1,500-foot-tall radio tower belonging to WFMX-FM, a Clear Channel station. Please do not consider further consolidation. Please do not consider further consolidation of the media or mandatory digital audio broadcasting. I also believe the commission should require cable TV providers to carry any and all local broadcasters that provide 3 hours or more a week of local programming.
Mr. Johnson, I'm sorry to interrupt you. I do want to make sure everybody gets a chance to speak. Thank you very much.
I think we're short one panelist. My hometown, Modesto, is an area without any community-minded radio stations. We've been fighting with AT&T and now Comcast Cable, who refuse to allow the Modesto low-power community TV station access to the Modesto cable service. How can any person, town, or city access the airwaves when they are under-regulated, under corporate control, and sold to the highest bidder? Thank you.
You've been listening to a public hearing on the concentration of ownership in the media. The hearing took place on April 26th in San Francisco, California. Thanks to KPOO, KPFA, and KFCF for making this available. Without a free press, democracy is impossible. Please support the project to bring a community radio station to Ithaca. For more information on Ithaca Community Radio at 88.1, visit www.ithacaradio.org. The next public meeting of the Ithaca Community Radio Project is Saturday, May 3rd, from 10:30 to noon at Autumn Leaves Used Books on the Commons in downtown Ithaca. Please come and get involved. And be sure to tune in to the Ithaca Radio Hour Mondays at 6:30 p.m. on WEOS Geneva 89.7 and Ithaca Community Radio 88.1. Our theme music, Unwelcome Guest, is performed by Billy Bragg and Wilco, with lyrics by Woody Guthrie. You can contact us or hear our archive of previous shows at www.unwelcomeguests.com.
Then I'll be gone, but that won't be my end. For my guns and my saddle will always be filled by unwelcome.